Tony and Jenny Brewski here from Real Ghost Stories Online. There has never been a better time than now to be an EPP, extra podcast person, to Real Ghost Stories Online.
There's more exclusive content than ever before.
Plus, our new EPP website is up and running where you can access all of our exclusive content anywhere you want on any device. Exclusive video, all of the archived episodes, it's all there when you sign up to be an EPP at realghoststoriesonline.com.
It's only $5 a month.
And that goes to keeping our show on the air and alive. Sign up now, become an EPP, and enjoy all of the bonus episodes for yourself when you sign up at realghoststoriesonline.com. Just click Become an EPP.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802. Or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown, and quite possibly, the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
And Tony and Jenny Brewski joining you once again for another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. Today's episode, it's open lines, your calls, your real ghost stories that you have dialed in to 855-853-4802. If you'd like to share a real ghost story, that's the exact same number that you can put in to your telephone device and call us and share your spooky tales as well. You think anybody has a rotary phone anymore? I loved rotary phones.
Probably. You know, there's a lot of companies that make those retro ones for people that just like having the older style.
Do they still work like an old one? Like with the current phone technology and all that, I wonder? Like,
I don't know. I wonder if they've updated that portion of it.
Like, I imagine, like, the new hip chic ones that are you know, I'm sure it works with whatever anyone has now, because even if the old rotary way of working, maybe it just pushes the tone out, but, it, you know, you get to do that, you know, thing. But I wonder, like, if I literally grabbed, like, if I had my grandparents' old rotary phone, if that would function if plugged into today's phone lines.
But I have no idea.
I couldn't even tell you where any of our phone lines are in our house because we don't use them anymore. You know, everything is cell phones, and I unplugged the last hardwired phone when we moved the office. I had the one remaining one in there, and the only thing that ever called me was telemarketers, because I didn't even know the number to it, and I still had to, like, look it up if I had to call the phone company. Like, what's your phone number? I have no idea. I never use your services.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, I have to have them to have internet with you, but yeah.
You should have just called your cell phone from the landline, and then you'd have it.
Well, I think I had, like, such a, the plan was, like, so, like, minimal. It was like emergency only.
Okay.
So it was like not even local calls were allowed on it. I mean, you could do it, but you're going to get charged like ridiculous fees because I never used it and I didn't want to pay to use it. So yeah, that's just kind of the point of it. So there you go. So I know where one jack is in the house for a landline.
Okay.
The rest completely gone. How did we get on that topic?
Talking about phones.
Oh, yeah.
And
there
you
we go.
You said some kind of weird thing
about
that
rotary.
Led to that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Anyhow, 855-853-4802. That's our phone number. Got a chance to look at some of the pictures yesterday from that tunnel that we were talking about in Traverse City between the hospitals, between the old asylum one, the Commons.
And over to Munson.
And over to Munson. Oh, my God.
Is that not the creepiest, most perfect tunnel? I mean, as far as creepy tunnels go, that's what everybody envisions.
You know, I do not blame anyone. It looks like the catacombs. I mean, it really, really does. That place could not be any creepier than it is. And our friend, our listener, Sue in Traverse City, she sent me another letter and said they're going to try and get in there here soon and take some pictures and get some more stories of that place. But, oh, my God. On yesterday's episode, if you missed it, we read her letter talking about what it was like working there, what some of the circumstances were for the individuals that were in this asylum at the time that they were there, all the way up into the 70s. And then some experiences that her daughter had working at the boutique high-end restaurant that is now housed within this former asylum. And, oh, my God, it's just... there's like new levels of creepy all just coming on. I'm glad I didn't discover that place until I was about to move from that area almost 10 years ago.
You'd be creeping around the creepy place.
I totally would. I would be wandering. That would be like all I would do. I would just wander around and I'd probably like fall through floors because the place wasn't really renovated much yet then. Mm-hmm. I'd probably be in jail, you know, for breaking in and, you know, taking pictures and all of that because I was, you know, what, 22, 23 and stupid and thinking, no, I'm never going to get caught for this. Although I was always kind of hesitant on that, but still something like that. It is such a giant piece of paranormal candy. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I'd ever be able to really turn down being there in a setting where there's no one there and it's easy to get in. I don't know that I could have turned that down. I really don't, just because it's just such a perfect, creepy place. Great place for pictures. So anyhow, let's go to our first caller of the show here. 855-853-4802. Of course, the phone number to call in and share your real ghost story with us. Let me just get our volume levels adjusted here so we don't go deaf when I press play on the caller. All right, let's hear our first ghost story of the show. Hi, you are on the air.
Hi, Tony and Jenny. This is Cassandra. It's my first time calling. And right now I'm here in the graveyard visiting a friend. It's dark and it's raining and it just made me want to call you guys and say one of my scary stories. When I was little, I grew up in a haunted house and we were haunted by a little boy. And one time, me and my sister were alone in our house and we were playing with these dolls that, they look so scary. They're like porcelain, but they're made out of plastic. And my sister was always scared to be on her own in the bathroom. And so she told me, can you come with me to the bathroom? And I said, yeah, sure. I'll go with you right now. And so she went to the bathroom, and I was there in the room. I got the doll we were playing with, and I hid it under the bed. And I was thinking in my mind, I'm going to scare her and tell her that the doll came back to life. And so as soon as I hid the doll right under the bed, I go to the bathroom, my sister, and I tell her, hey, let's pretend the doll's alive. And then she's knocking on the door, and I say, yeah, yeah. And so I get my hand out of the door, and I start knocking. And then we just say that the doll's alive. And then finally I get bored, so I sit in the bathtub, and I tell her, are you done yet? She's like, almost, almost. And all of a sudden, we hear a little knock on the door. And we just, like, really were like, I think like, is my brother come back? I don't know. So I open the door, and I look in the hallway, and there's nothing. But then I turn to my left where the room was, and this cubby thing where my mom would put her makeup, the doll that I hid under the bed is just sitting there facing me. I quickly slam the door and I freak out and I tell my sister, and we eventually burn the doll because she kept coming back. But yeah, that was my story. Hope you liked it. And thank you. And I can't really hang up because my hands are all wet with the rain. Okay, bye.
It sounds like an Annabelle kind of story to me.
Where the doll takes on a life of its own?
Yeah. Just some pranking, you know, trying to say, oh, the doll's alive. And then, you know, you get what you deserve.
At the beginning, did she say that she was calling from within a cemetery?
Some friends.
Is that what I heard?
Yes.
I thought I heard that correctly. She had a strong accent, so it was a little difficult to make out, and the phone connection seemed to be not super, but I was like, oh my, wow.
I think they listen to us in the cemetery.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it like a group that goes out, has a picnic by some graves, and listens to our show?
It's like a listen to the show at night in the cemetery kind of group. I think is awesome.
It's not your average book club.
No. No, but that was a decent story. I mean, that was really creepy.
Yeah. Wow. That was a very creepy story. I'm even more creeped out just by the idea of them sitting there and calling from the cemetery in the dark, in the rain. That's just, wow. That's some dedication to really set the mood.
It is.
For listening to our show. Mm-hmm. Thank you for calling in and sharing that story. 855-853-4802 is our number at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost story with us. Let's go over here to Wes. Hi, Wes.
Hi, Tony and Jenny. This is Wes. Sorry, I think I lost my call there. However, I want to tell you my ghost story. in 2005, my girlfriend and I moved into an apartment, and we hadn't been there a couple weeks. So that you know, she must have a bladder the size of a pea. So every evening, every night, she would get up, use the restroom, get back to bed. This is normal. One night, she gets in bed, and really quickly after using the restroom, it cuddles up next to me. I don't really think anything of it. And the next day, I say, what was the deal last night? It was like you saw a ghost or something. And she paused, and then she's like, I did. And so, what'd you see? She said, at the foot of our bed, which at the foot of our bed is kind of a two-door closet. She said there was a lady there standing just staring at us, and it freaked me out, and I jumped in bed. Didn't really think much about it, and as the weeks went on, and, another month or so, nothing really crazy happened, but at the time, we had a dial-up internet, so, and you're familiar with that sound. You have to actually click and dial into the internet, but our computer in the other room would just start dialing up for no reason at all. There would be nobody in there. And this would kind of happen somewhat regularly, irregularly, not every day type of thing. So we thought maybe we should do a little investigating and see if maybe this has a connection with the spirit that she had seen. We confronted the office management, and they said they couldn't disclose which specific apartment somebody had committed suicide in, but it was in our block, and a block is like four apartments. So we just maybe made a connection there that it's possibly like maybe it was our apartment. After that, months went by with nothing. Now, we're nearing the end of our lease, and it was pretty hot. We're in the middle of the summer, so we start camping out in the living room. It was nice and cool in there, and we were probably only just a few weeks from moving out of the apartment, and late at night again, she wakes me up in a frantic. She's like, look into our bedroom, and in the bedroom, over the top of our bed was a sphere of glowing light, like pulsating light, shades of different colors, but an orb. This was not a vehicle driving by casting shadows in the room to cause some weird effect through the glass. I mean, I know what that looks like. This was absolutely not it. So I actually got to see that for myself. After that, we moved out of the apartment, and I really haven't had a ghost experience since, but I thought I'd share my story. And Tony, if your show was Real Ghost Stories and Bitchin' Quiche Recipes, I would totally be in for that too. So thanks for your time, guys. Have a good day.
I'm thinking EPP exclusive, just Bitchin' Quiche Recipes, just a whole section, and that's what we call it.
Oh, gosh.
That's all it is. It's bitch and quiche sections.
I don't even like quiche.
You don't like quiche?
It's okay. It's not that great.
You have just completely insulted, half the world.
Sorry.
Because it's an amazing dish.
Sorry.
I'm not really super into quiche myself. I just think it's kind of bizarre and fun to say at the same time. When you have a good quiche, though, it's a good quiche. Okay. Have you ever had a really good quiche? Maybe you just haven't had the right quiche.
Well, I liked... Was that a quiche that your mom made?
It was like a version of a quiche. I'd say a bastardized quiche.
I liked
quiche.
That. Yeah.
It was delicious.
All the other quiches I've ever had were full of too much canned spinach and crap. It was gross.
That's true. Okay. Enough about quiches.
Okay.
But I think we just have to find you the right quiche. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost story with us. We would absolutely love to hear it and share it on the show. And if you like our show, speaking of sharing, be sure to let your friends know about us. you know, pinning us on Pinterest, a little love out there on Facebook, Twitter, just let folks know that we exist. That helps grow our audience. It makes your friends go, oh, they like ghosts too. So now we can openly talk about that because we never said that out loud. It's one of those things with social media. People say all this shit that they normally would never say out loud to their friends, but suddenly they feel the ability to say it online.
Mm-hmm.
Here's one of those things. Instead of like going on a political rant or something, just share your love for ghosts. Much less divisive.
It's much more entertaining.
Yes.
Too.
Like, oh, they're into ghost stuff too. That's interesting. I always like those shows. It'll open up lines of communication between your friends and your family, and you'll be much closer than ever before. And you'll also let someone else know about our show.
Okay.
What a win-win.
It's a win-win.
There you go. Win-win-win, actually. For you, your friends and family, and us. Win-win-win.
Okay, anyway.
Okay, let's go to another call. Clayton, hi.
Hello. My name's Clayton DePlacy. I'm calling from Calgary, Alberta. However, the story took place in 1975 in New Brunswick, Canada. Actually, it started then. And you have to forgive me. I mean, I've never actually told the story to anybody. I'm now 45. In 1975, I was five. And the child psychiatry... in their infinite wisdom back then, if you recall or look it up, you'll find out that that in their infinite wisdom, they figured that there was a criminal gene. So, you know, this is a kind of a side story, but my father was a criminal, I guess. He went to jail. So the child services took me from my mother, who was a single mother. Again, another taboo in the 70s, I guess. And they put me in a reform school in New Brunswick. So I was five, and they kept me there for like 8 years till I was 13. However, when I got to this reformatory, obviously I was very alone and scared and everything. And, you know, there's a lot of kids there that were like really bad kids, I guess, you know. And I really didn't know what was going on. They told me I was going to a summer camp. Another story, like I said. However, when I got there, there was all sorts of kids that were just thrown in there, like bad kids, good kids, there was all sorts of wings for us kids, but there was other wings in this place that were like, you know, screams of torture, and you could hear stuff going on, and that was like mentally handicapped people and stuff like that that were back there. And but in my unit, which was like, I think A1, it was A1, A2, A3, A4, and you went up in stages as you grew older, you know, so I was in A1. There was this you know, all sorts of staff workers that were violent and all sorts of stuff's going on. Of course, you know, I guess it was lots of lawsuits, but I'm not involved in any of them. And they had a place in every one of these units that was called a quiet room. Now, this was when the workers had enough of you or whatever. You know, you were crying because you missed your family, whatever. They threw you in this little dank dungeon with, you know, just a concrete floor and no lights. And it was a little side room from the staff room. And they would throw you in this room, you know, and leave you there for days and just throw in food for you, whatever. And then, you know, half the time, you know, you were in your pajamas or whatever, wherever situation they drug you in there out of. And, you know, they would throw you a mop to clean it up whenever you left. And it was very bad. And and there was no lights in there and anything at all. Well, the first night I was thrown into this place, and I was only like five. I remember I was only there for a couple months, but I was not stop crying for my mother because they told me I was supposed to go home, which I didn't, of course. But they threw me in this quiet room because I wouldn't stop crying, you know. So anyways, when they threw me in this quiet room, the only source of light was a little 4-inch by 4-inch plexiglass window that went into the office, the staff office. And the staff office, you know, when they drug you to the staff office to throw you in this quiet room, you know, I would beg them, please don't turn off the light, because this was the only, you know, source of light was this four inch by four inch plexiglass window. And sometimes they would be cruel and shut it off, you know, and be in there in the dark. But the very first time I was thrown in there, as soon as they threw me in there, there was another kid in there. And this kid, but he wasn't a normal kid like the rest of us. He was crawling on the ground like he had metal plates or metal, I don't know, looked like an exoskeleton type thing, you know, like, And I was terrified at first. You know, they threw me in there with this kid, and I'm like, what's going on? You know, like, who are you? What are you in here for? And he didn't talk to me the whole night. He stared at me, and he had a helmet on, and he had all, like, he was just crawling on the floor, you know. So halfway through the night, after, like, I stayed in the other side of the corner, and I could see him through the plexiglass window at the bottom of his feet, inside the same room as me. And I'm like, you know, for hours and hours, I was just so terrified to say anything. And then finally, I was like, what are you here for? Like, what did they do to you? Who, you know, where are you supposed to be? You know, where's your family? And this kid told me he died in this place. I think it was like, he said like 10 years before, so that would be like 1965. Like, you know, 5 years. I was born in 1970, by the way. I'm now 45. And I said, but how could you be here? He said, I'm stuck here. I can't get out. They won't let me out. And I told him, don't worry. I'll tell them that you're here and you can be let out when I get let out. So I think it was about a day and a half, maybe 2 days later, you know, after a few times they'd open the door to let food in and water, and that would be it. But, I mean, there was no bathroom or bedding or bed at all or bedding or anything in this place, you know. It was a nightmare itself. But, you know, I survived. But I turned around when they opened the door 2 days later, and the first thing I said was, you got to help this kid. And I turned around, and he was gone. And I turned back to the staff worker and, you know, come on, kid, let's go. And he just drug me out of there. So it was totally, you know, I didn't tell nobody, right? You know, I was still terrified myself of everything and everything. It was bullies. It was just terrible. You know, like you're in a dorm with 80 or 100 kids, you know, in this unit. And never knew anybody. And, you know, and everybody's crying and hurting and stuff, and vicious staff workers and stuff like that. And, you know, different nights and stuff when I was really young there, like, I didn't get it till I think I was like 12 or 13. So 7 or 8 years there before I even hit puberty. Thanks there, government, but Canadian government for you. You know, as the months went by and I started being lied to and stuff like that, I started seeing this kid out of the corner of my eye everywhere I was going. And I started noticing right off the bat that nobody else noticed this kid, but he was always looking at me. And it was usually when I was in trouble or they were, you know, smacking me or hitting me with, they had this few staff workers there with a big stick and they were beating, you know, you couldn't whimper, you couldn't do nothing, you know, they put you up on your knees in the corner, make you sit there on your knees on a concrete floor for like a day till you were bruised and, you know, collapsed. And this kid was always there for me. He was always by, like one time he was under my bed, I got beat so bad. By the staff worker, you probably won't want to even probably tell the story now to the public because of all the other crap that I said. But nevertheless, I never really kind of thought how I would word this. This is the first time I've even told this story since it happened. Okay, so anyways, one particular night I got thrashed really bad by this here great big black staff worker. Again, I'm not going to mention, I still remember his name, but I'm not going to mention it. He's likely dead a long time ago. Anyway, so God rest his soul. But, you know, he beat me, and he beat me bad with this thing. Like, I really couldn't walk out of the bed. And I fell down on the side of the bed, and he pulled me back up by my hair of the head. And just as I was being pulled up from the floor, I noticed the kid was under my bed. And he had a big smile on his face, and it was just the most tenderest thing, you know. And he said, it's going to be okay. And it was the first time he said anything, you know. Other times, you know, he... You know, I mean, other than the time he told me that he was there for 10 years and they wouldn't let him out, other than that, I seen him all the time and never heard, never, you know, I went around the corner looking for him, he was gone, I kept on chasing him, and he crawling on the floor on his hands and his knees, you know, with this, a few years later, he told me he had polio, so that's what it was, he was crippled up, you see, but someone did something to him in there and killed him in this place. And I was sure of it, as sure as I was stuck in this place. And, and this kid, he was there all through A1, which was like 5 to 8, and then A2, which is like, you know, 9 to 10 and then, and, you know, went on like that, like 9 to 13 or something, and 13 to, you know, and he was there through it all with me, but he never aged. I mean, I kept on, like, I mean, I was 5 years old, so I didn't notice the age too much in myself, but, you know, by the time I started getting, you know, just 11, 12 years old, you know, I was starting to sprout out a bit, and I was starting to get bigger and stuff, but this kid never changed from the first time he was in that quiet room with me way back in 1975, so, like, you know, back, so, like, jump ahead, like, 1980, you know, as I progressed in the units and kept on being told I was going to go home, never went home, but fun stuff. And then they, but he was always the same age. He never grew up. And I kept on asking him, how come you're not getting older? And he said he couldn't get older and they won't let him leave this place. He's stuck here. And I have to get help to send him help. And I never did, because I never knew what I was seeing. I never knew that if I said anything, they might keep me longer too, you know. So I was just terrified to say anything. But he was kind of like, you know, after the first year or so, and every time I went to the quiet room, he was there. Every time I got beat or I was, you know, curled up in a ball crying to nobody or praying to God because I just thought, get me out of here. He was there. He was there under my bed. He kept on, like, not haunting me, but he was only, I could only see him when I was getting abused in one way or the other. He was there. I could always see him. I could always see him first in the corner of my eye, and, of course, like, in the quiet room, because there was only that 4-inch light coming through the window. You know, I could just see his outline, and I could see his, and I could hear the metal on the concrete, you know, and he was moving around and stuff. And at first, like I said, I was scared, but once he started telling me that he was a kid too, and you know, I felt a little bit safer with him. And then I kept on seeing him. And then after, by the time I got to about 11 or so, I noticed a lot sooner, but I really, you know, it really hit home when I realized he shows up every time I'm in trouble. So he was like almost like a guardian angel to me, like, you know. So, anyways, there's probably a lot more to be said about it. However, it's almost 1 o'clock in the morning in Calgary, Alberta. I got to go to work tomorrow. But I watch you guys a lot, so I just realized that I could call in the story. So I just, this thing's always been on the tip of my tongue. It's always been in the forefront of my mind.
Thank you for calling in and sharing your story with us. Well, that was nice and disturbing.
Yeah, it's really awful that he had to go through that.
What is really disturbing to me is just, you look at the time frame from when these things were going on, mm-hmm. and in history class you hear about the horrible shit they did, like in the Middle Ages and in all different time periods. Like, how did anyone ever do that? This shit was going on in the 70s, mm-hmm. in asylums, quote unquote, like this, yeah. You know, and nobody was doing anything about it until, you know, 80s, 90s, when, you know, suddenly, maybe this is not the best way to be treating people. You know, I mean, God, animals in zoos were being treated better, mm-hmm. than a lot of humans were in these facilities. So on to the paranormal aspect of this, though.
I just think it is very interesting that this little ghost boy, you know, mm-hmm. decided to look after Clayton the yeah. whole time he was there. And it makes you wonder if he looked after any other kids, sure. probably over the years, but it seemed like he was always there for him.
Yeah. I wonder if he was able to look after others at the same time.
I don't know.
Or if that's even a possibility. It didn't. I'm sure within, you know, the staff sounds like winners, but I suppose it wouldn't bode too well for Clayton when he's in there talking about seeing a ghost boy either.
Yeah, he even said that. He said, yeah. They'd probably keep me longer.
Yeah.
And that's true. They probably would have at that point.
Exactly. Exactly. Because it sounds like he was the only one that was actually able to see this. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like everyone was catching this apparition. That was quite a story, Clayton. Thank you for calling in and sharing that story with us, and having the courage to do that. And we're happy that we could be your outlet for getting that out. I can't imagine that was easy to share. That's what our show is for.
Mm-hmm.
It's for things like that. It's for experiences that you're not going to feel comfortable sharing with anybody else, but you can do it here. And you can do it with anonymity as well. I mean, obviously he used his name, but you do not need to do that if you do not want to. So there you go. Thank you, Clayton, for that story. That was really, really interesting. 855-853-4802 is our number. Let's go to a caller in California. Hi.
Hi, guys. This is Manuel from Northern California, actually Winters, California. And I wanted to call back and share another story. It's a story that happened to me when I was about 15 years old. I'm 51 now, so I might have been 14. It was 14 or 15. I was living with my father and my stepmother at the time, and we moved across town. We lived in San Pablo in the Bay Area, and we moved into this little, it was a three-bedroom, kind of small house. It was my father, my stepmother, my little brother, my sister, and myself. And my father was one of these guys that always would make deals with the landlords. Oh, we'll paint the house to, you know, chip down the rent, or, you know, he'd always create more work for us. So we went over there to look at the house, and I remember when we first walked in, he opened the garage, and I walked in the garage, and the previous tenants had left garbage everywhere. So we were cleaning up, and I noticed out of the corner of my eye that there was a ladder that went up, and somebody had finished off the attic. It was all sheetrock, and I could see it from the bottom. And, you know, me being 15 years old, I thought, oh, man, if I could make that my bedroom, I could sneak in and out of the house all the time. And my dad would never know, you know. He's not going to know if I leave in the middle of the night or someone would go sneak off with my friends. So I asked my dad, I said, can I make my bedroom up there? And he said, yeah, you know, you're going to clean it out and do all the work. He said, I got enough to do. So I climbed up the ladder, and this is, I think, in June. It was warm. I remember that. It doesn't get super hot in the Bay Area, but it was probably about 75 or 80 degrees, so the attic was probably a lot hotter. And I remember I climbed up the ladder, and I was all excited, and I stuck my head up there. And as soon as I stuck my head up and looked into the space, this blast of ice-cold air hit me in the face. And I remember, you know, I didn't think too much about ghosts or anything then, but I remember it really scared me. I almost fell off the ladder, and I got down, and I never, ever went back up there again. It freaked me out. I kind of forgot about that. I was a kid, and I didn't think too much about that kind of stuff. So we got all settled in, and at the time, my father was driving up to Ione to my grandfather's on the weekends because he was building a house on some property he had. So my dad would get off work on Friday, and him and my stepmother and my little brother and my sister was living between our house and my real mother's house at the time. They would all take off on the weekend, so I'd be there by myself, and I thought it was great because, you know, I'm a young kid. I could get away with whatever I wanted to get away with. So one weekend they took off, and I had a friend come over, and we were just sitting in the living room watching TV, and I was kind of sitting up on the couch with my feet on the couch, and my buddy was behind me, and he was in the recliner, my dad's chair, and I couldn't see him because it was behind me in the corner of the room, and the TV was in front. So we're sitting there watching TV, and all of a sudden, it sounded like somebody picked up the dresser in my sister's room and just slammed it against the wall. I mean, you could hear glass. It was loud. I mean, it scared the hell out of me. And my first thought was, what's he doing? I thought my friend behind me was back there messing around in my sister's room or something, and he knocked something over. And I turned around. He's in the recliner. And he's, you know, he's scared. I'm scared. You know, we're young. Like, wow, you know, somebody's in the house. So we had a big black dog, a chow, and the ones with a purple tongue. And so we let the dog in, and the dog immediately, when it came in the house, started to act weird. So we turned on all the lights, and we checked all the bedrooms. It was a very clean person. The house was immaculate. My sister's room, where it sounded like the sounds came from, there was nothing out of place. I mean, literally nothing. Nothing on the floor, not even a piece of clothing. There was nothing to account for that loud crash. So we're pretty freaked out. We're trying to calm ourselves down, and we don't really know what made this noise. So we come back in the living room, and then the dog starts acting funny. And the dog, my friend goes back to the chair. He was sitting in the recliner, and it was in a corner, and we had hardwood floors. And the dog starts growling at the chair. So my friend gets scared. He gets out of the chair, and we slide the chair out of the corner, and the dog's hair stands up, and it's lunging at the corner of the room, barking and growling like there's something. There's nothing there. And it got so bad, the dog started to scratch the floors. We had to literally drag the dog and put him out in the garage. There was a door that led from the kitchen out into the garage. And that dog, that door had a metal thing on one side that faced the garage. And that dog scratched and barked and bumped against that door for a couple of hours just trying to get back in the house. That was a pretty freaky house. I had some other experiences there as well. But I think it'll go too long. I used to hear scratching in the walls all the time. I think I experienced more of it because I was there by myself all the time on the weekends. And when the whole family was there, I used to hear the scratching in the walls all the time. But I thought it was just mice or something until after we had the creepy stuff happen. Some other things, like I said, happened, but it's just more time. Anyway, thanks for the show. I love it. And I will call back again. Talk to you later. Bye now.
Scratching in the walls, even if it is a mouse, drives me crazy. That just scares me anyway.
It's usually a mouse.
I know. But that's why I said even if it is just a mouse, it's bad.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want that for sure. Unfortunately, a lot of times when you have paranormal-esque things going on, and especially some of the darker stories that we've heard, when that ends up being an occurrence, it's usually not the greatest of things, you know, mm-hmm. that are causing it. Although it does make you kind of wonder that, when you have the scratching in the wall and you have, you know, paranormal things going on, is the paranormal using essentially resources here to create that scratching? You know, like, is it bringing in mice or things to make those sounds, or is it just doing it all on its own?
I think it would be less work for the entity.
Yeah.
To just do it.
Yeah. And it's probably what it is. Mm-hmm. It's because we talk about sometimes, and that's probably more so with human ghosts, just manipulating existing things to get attention. I suppose you could manipulate somehow but if you're going to go through the effort of getting mice or raccoons or whatever into the walls, if you can do that, why not just scratch on your own?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, interesting story.
Yeah.
Very interesting story. 855-853-4802, our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost story with us here at Real Ghost Stories Online. Let's go over here to, let's say, Paul in Wisconsin. Let's hear your story. Hi.
Hey, guys. This is Paul from Wisconsin again. I called a while back and told you about my son, Alex, who was 3 at the time, who seemed to be empathic and had the ability, apparently, to project himself places, like into his car seat or on the other side of the house. You were wondering if anything had happened since we'd moved from the place where all these things were happening. We had one instance where it happened, and it was brief, and then one other time we went up to spend the night at my mom's, myself and the kids, while my wife was on a trip. And my mother, who has an open mind about things, actually heard Alex cough and talk out on the balcony outside her, I guess it would be third story bedroom. That weirded her out a little bit, but we haven't had anything happen since. He does seem to still be pretty empathic. We just had a baby, and it wasn't an easy pregnancy for my wife. And Alex seemed to really feel he had a lot of tummy aches during the pregnancy, and they quit once the baby arrived, which I found quite interesting. Anyway, the reason I'm calling is a little while ago, I see you posted an episode where you talked a little bit about getting those weird feelings of being watched and how weird that can get. And it's experiences like that that sort of got me interested in the paranormal. I used to do hardwood floors. This was well before I was married, quite a few years ago. I did a lot of work around Wisconsin, a lot of old homes that needed floors refinished. And a lot of beautiful homes, a lot of old homes, farmhouses, Victorian houses, stuff like that. So I was privileged to be in a lot of interesting places. It was always in the older homes that I would be working away, sanding floors, and usually when I had my face to the wall, sanding the edges of the floors, that I would get this weird feeling that I was being watched. And this didn't always happen when I was alone in any house. It was only when I was in older homes, homes that I would guess would be somewhere around, you know, 60 years and older. I really got an intense feeling of being watched when I was standing floors in an old schoolhouse that somebody had bought and was converting into a place to live. And I remember getting that feeling, and I stopped my equipment and I just stood up and looked around. Nobody was in the house except me. And I noticed that the pull chain for the ceiling fan above me was swinging. And there was no breeze in the room. I hadn't bumped into it. I was on the other end of the room. But it was swinging pretty violently. And I just watched it go for a while, and it, you know, settled on its own, and nothing really happened after that. But it was enough to kind of make me wonder if all this ghost stuff had some merit. Then toward the tail end of my hardwood floor career, I had the opportunity to finish the floors in a home that had been owned by the P.T. Barnum of Barnum and Bailey Circus. It was in Baraboo, and his descendant, I'm guessing his grandson or great-grandson, had just returned from school in England. He had the accent stuck on him and everything. And anyway, he wanted to have the house refinished. And so he had cleared out the second story except for a lot of pictures and things that stay on shelves. And so there was a lot of paraphernalia that had been accumulated over the years, pictures, memorabilia, all related to the circus industry. It was very fascinating. I was pretty excited to do these floors. Anyway, I was doing one of the bedrooms on the second story and, you know, sanding away the old finish. And once again, I had my face to the wall. I was bent over and sanding the finish away from the edges. And I just got this intense feeling that somebody was there in the room with me. And at the time, I was the only person there. So I tried to ignore it. I kept on standing, and then the room got cold. Now, keep in mind, this was, I'm thinking, August. Yeah, it was August. It was a very warm day. Windows were open, and suddenly the room got very cool, but far cooler than would come from maybe the sun going behind a cloud or a breeze coming in. It was pretty intense. And I thought, man, that's weird. So I stopped my equipment, and I turned around. And right in the center of the room, I'm trying to think how to describe this. It'd be like it was about man height, but it was a column of the light sort of refracting a little bit, sort of like what you would see on a hot day above an asphalt road. Not the mirage so much as just the air, the light trembling right above the horizon. If you've ever seen that. And that's basically what it was, only it was a column of that right in the middle of the room. And it kind of weirded me out a little bit. I just kept staring at it for a while, and then I decided, okay, well, if this ghost thing is real, then I might as well talk to it and just assure it that I'm not doing anything wrong here. I mean, this house has been in a family for a long time. So I just said, hey, look, you know, I know I don't belong here necessarily, but I've been hired to refinish the floors, make it all look good again. The house is getting fixed, and I'm, you know, helping do that. So You can just go your way, do your thing, leave me alone. I'll leave you alone. I'll get my job done, and I'll be out of here. And it faded away. It was gone. And the room warmed up, and that feeling of somebody there vanished. I guess that was kind of the clincher for me as far as going from being open-minded about the whole thing to actually believing in the existence of ghosts and other supernatural things. So anyway, I won't keep you much longer, but I thought I'd share that. And I don't know, maybe sometime I'll get to experience that again. Hopefully not in my own home. That's just too creepy. Anyway, you guys take care, and I'll keep on listening. Bye.
Carnival things have always, and circus things have always freaked me out.
Yeah.
I've never been a fan. I don't know why. I know exactly what he's talking about in Baraboo with the Barnum and Bailey. That was a big deal. You hear the ads all over the state. Barnum and Bailey in Baraboo. I don't know why. I mean, it's something that, it's designed to bring joy and happiness. And for me, the idea of a circus and that sort of, you know, the fanfare of it really just creeped me out more than anything else.
Well, I can imagine if, you know, this is P.T. Barnum's, one of his homes, and it's still owned by the family, that there's a collection of artifacts. And, you know, maybe it was artifacts not just from their circus, but other circuses just in general.
Sure.
And that was an industry back when it started that was not always really a positive thing.
Sure.
And so I'm not trying to say that, you know, that about Barnum and Bailey,
no.
But I'm saying, you know.
Just in general of the practices that were done. I mean, and it really was lack of regulation and, I don't know, lack of sense, you know, just in general of what's appropriate and not.
Right, but I'm thinking some of those artifacts could hold a lot of attachment there.
Of course.
Be very haunted.
Well, I mean, and I'm not speaking again of Barnum and Bailey, you know, by any, because I don't really know their history all that well. But just speaking in broader terms of just the traveling circus in general, I mean, there was a lot of folks who, you know, went along with those things who were, you know, essentially the term freak show, you know, that's where that was invented. And these were not, you know, freaks. These are in most cases people with some sort of disability that then were gawked at, you know, but these are human beings. And I can imagine, you know, things like that, that these people who were subjected to lives like this, you know, some people will make the argument and some say, well, they were given a career and a life and this and that. And others will be like, no, they were tortured and, you know, hauled around. You know, there's, you know, whatever way you want to look at it. You know, it's a life being subjected to just people gawking at you because of something that you can't control.
Well, that, not even to mention, you know, some of the circus's practices with their animals.
Oh, yeah. And that, too. Yeah. Add that into the mix.
Yeah.
I mean, and again, it's not nothing reflecting on that specific one, just talking of the industry in general as a whole from way, way, way back. And that's just fact. You know, I can imagine there'd be a lot of negativity surrounding artifacts that go way back in the circus industry, you know. So I mean, I'm not surprised that you're going to have weird things attached to it. Maybe, I don't know, is that, as a young child, I always felt creeped out by it. And it wasn't just clowns. It was just the whole idea in general. Is that empathic of me to be little and, you know, something that's, you know, a lot of kids are excited about and they're happy and, oh, I can't wait to go see that. I was always like, eh, I feel really uncomfortable and weird around this stuff.
Possibly. Was it the crowd or was it because of just the idea of what a circus is and what it does?
I don't know, because I don't know how much I really understood what was going on or its history either. It was just, I don't know. The big top tent was never something that I looked at with excitement or joy. It was something I looked at going, there's something that feels a little bit off here. You know, I don't know. I felt, I mean, I'm not an empath, I think, anyway, to the level that you are. But there's always been certain things where, and I'm not going to, like, go into detail on them, but throughout my life where I felt weird vibes around groups of people, certain groups of people, whether I, you know, personally knew them or had some sort of association with it, whether it be through work or, you know, childhood play, or individuals, you know, through work or play. And without a whole lot of evidence, just felt weird.
Mm-hmm.
Not to the point where I could, like, pinpoint anything and go, this person is doing this or that. But just to the point where I was like, I'm going to choose not to be associated, involved in any way, shape, or form. And more times than not, later in life, you find, oh, well, look at what that person's up to now.
Yeah.
And
no,
it's usually not good.
I think we all have a little bit of that.
Yeah.
But if you're able to tune into it, don't ever ignore it.
Sure.
I can tell you there's two neighbors in our neighborhood that if they spoke to my children, I would go ape shit on them just because
sure.
they've not done anything wrong.
Yeah.
But I get a very bad vibe from these two people, and they're separate neighbors. Yeah. And I just like, mm-mm.
Sometimes you just kind of, well, one of them really hasn't done a whole lot, but he just gives off a weird vibe and kind of, you know, just has a weird look, I guess. I don't know how any other way to say it, but there's a weird vibe going on. The other one has done creepy shit.
Mm-hmm.
The other one's been in the pool snorkeling amongst children. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's mainly kids that are in the pool.
Yeah.
The only other time people are in the pool is if you're in there with your kid, preventing them from drowning. It's not like a parent's like, hey, it's not that type of a pool.
And it's not, that's not the only incident.
No.
There's been other things yeah. that he's done that
sure.
were questionable at best.
Like the only one giving out full-size candy bars?
No, there's other things. So okay. much so that we checked to see if he was
oh,
happened
yeah.
to be on
a
registry.
On a list, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's just, you just get vibes. And when you got kids, I think it goes off even higher, you know, as far as the spidey sense.
When I had Lena, the other neighbor, the one that just kind of gives off a weird vibe,
mm-hmm.
I took her for a walk, and that was one of the only times I ever saw her growl at somebody and her haunches raise.
Mm-hmm.
And he just kind of looked at her, and he had like an evil laugh, and he laughed at her. And then we just came home, and I told you about that.
Yeah.
It's like, that guy, there's something wrong with him.
Yeah, they know.
They do.
And you know, if when all else fails, if you feel like your spidey sense is, I'm not quite sure, bring your pets around and see how they act.
Go with the dog.
With nothing else going on around them.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. That wraps up our episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. Thank you guys for calling in and sharing your real ghost stories with us. We greatly appreciate it. If you like the show, you have a desire for it to continue well into the future, well, consider throwing a little into the hat to keep it afloat and keep this thing going so we can continue to fund the bandwidth of this show and everything else that goes along with putting this show out there to the world. $5 a month is all we ask. Click Become an EPP on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com. You get all the bonus material, access to our exclusive EPP website, 40-some bonus episodes, and then some exclusive video, archived content. All in all, there's like more than 100 bonus episodes up there. So anyhow, check it out and consider keeping us going if you like the show. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thanks for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.